Welcome to the serialized audiobook Pandemic, book 3 of the Infected trilogy. Written by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. Performed by Phil Giganti. Pandemic is also available in print, ebook, and unabridged audiobook. For links to purchase any version, visit scottsigler.com/pandemic.
Book 2, Chicago. Chapter 1, Day 6, Men with Guns.
"Hey, Margot," Perry said. "Aren't you going to say hello? That's what you're supposed to say at this point. Hello."
Her mouth moved.
"Hello, Perry."
Perry Dawsey smiled. The bomb screamed its war cry of dissent. Margaret tried to take a step forward, but couldn't move her foot. She looked down. What little blacktop remained atop the decades-old brick street had melted, all shiny and black, a stinking, gravel-strewn mess that trapped her like an ancient animal in a tar pit. Hot wind whipped madly, making roofs sag and smolder. Her blue hazmat suit slowly dripped off her, running down her body to puddle along with the liquid tar. Perry drew in a deep breath through his nose, seeming to soak up the hot wind and the fetid air. He looked around.
"This is where I caught Chelsea," he said. "The voices stopped, but you know what? It didn't matter. Those things were already inside of me. Nothing I did made any difference. I shouldn't have fought them, Margot. I should have welcomed them."
Her suit melted away, leaving her naked. Stabbing pains rippled across her skin, the hard sensation of long needles sliding into her muscles, her organs. Perry frowned.
"Margot, what's wrong?"
"It hurts," she said. "Bad."
He nodded knowingly.
"I think they're moving to your brain. I know you don't want to lose control, but it will be okay."
The pains grew worse, driving to her bones, through her bones, and into the marrow inside.
I'm not infected. The tests. I took the tests."
Perry reached out his right hand, cupped her naked breast. His skin felt icy cold, a knife-sharp contrast to the blast furnace that roiled around them.
"The orbital traveled across the stars. It could rewrite our DNA. It could turn our bodies into factories that made the things it needed. Did you think it wasn't smart enough to make changes, Margot?"
Her skin bubbled like the street's boiling tar. She fell to her knees. Perry stood over her, gently stroking her head. Her scalp came away in bloody, wet hair-covered clumps that clung to his huge hand. He squatted in front of her, put a finger under her chin, lifted it until she looked into his blue eyes. Then he gave his finger the smallest flick. Her jaw tore off, spiraled away. Perry smiled.
"Did you really think it wasn't capable of beating your silly little test?"
A shudder brought her awake. She sat up, pulled the blankets and sheets tight around her. She was alone in the tiny bunk room. She was on the Coronado. She was here with Tim, with Clarence, with Polyus and his seals. She was safe. Or was she? Outside that door stood a man with a gun. A man who would murder her if her next test blinked red. And Clarence. She couldn't trust him. He'd worked with Cheng to keep her out of the project until it was too late, until Cheng got all the credit. Tim Feely had also helped Cheng, gone behind Margaret's back, sabotaged her work. She had put her life on the line, and the three of them, three men, had conspired to push the only woman out, to make sure she got no credit. No, not three, 4, because Murray had to be part of it. Now that breweries were kicking out millions of bottles of Feely's yeast, and how convenient the strain was named after him and not her, did Murray even need her anymore? Maybe that man outside with the gun wouldn't stay outside for long. Maybe he was already planning on how to put a bullet in Margaret's brain. Maybe he was... Her thoughts trailed off. Her paranoid thoughts. Perry had been paranoid. All the infection victims had been. Paranoia. A sore throat. A headache. Body pains. She had all the symptoms. The incubation period was around 48 hours. Her suit had been ripped during the battle, but that was just 20 hours ago. Even if she had contracted the infection, she wouldn't be showing symptoms yet. She couldn't be infected. Could she? No, she couldn't, because she'd ingested Tim's inoculant and introduced his modified yeast into her system. That should have killed the crawlers long before they could reach her brain. A knock at the door. Margaret? Klimas, coming with another test. She couldn't move. She couldn't speak. The door opened. Klimas stepped inside, a smiling assassin with a black eye. No preliminaries. He just offered the box. And why not? The drill was old hat. Klimas knew she wasn't infected. She'd tested negative so many times already. But how could that be? Her hand reached out on its own, took the box. She didn't want to die. Not like this. Not with a bullet to the head. She ripped open the foil, used the cool, wet cotton to clean her finger. She pressed the tester against her fingertip, felt the tiny sting of the needle punching home. Yellow. Blinking yellow. Slowing. 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 Green. Klimas nodded. Good to go, thanks. He took the blinking test and the empty box from her, then walked out. He shut the door behind him. Margaret's body shuddered with both relief and terror. She was alive, but she was infected. Had to be. But why hadn't it turned red? Did you think it wasn't smart enough to make changes, Margot? Did you really think it wasn't capable of beating your silly little test? She shook her head.
No,
she whispered.
Oh, God, no.
Cantrell. He'd tested negative over and over again. But when he'd escaped his cell, he'd come after her, tried to kill her. Cantrell, the one with the genius IQ, just like her. He'd been infected the whole time, right under their nose. The orbital had created a new organism, an organism that the test didn't detect. And she had it. She had to tell someone. Warn everyone. She had to tell Klimas. But if she did, he'd kill her on the spot. If she didn't, she'd convert, become one of them. But maybe she wouldn't. This new organism, it was untested, unproven. Maybe she wouldn't convert. And maybe she was just being crazy. The test turned green, not red. Green. She was okay. She wasn't infected. She wasn't. Chapter 2. A Prayer for the Dying. Murray sat on a couch in the Oval Office. In front of him was a table loaded with neat folders. Beyond that, a chair that held President Blackmun. They were alone. They had spent the last hour in the Situation Room, along with Admiral Porter, the Secretary of Defense, and a few other big hitters, debriefing about the second naval disaster to occur on Lake Michigan in the last 6 days. At the end of that meeting, Blackmun had asked Murray to join her. For the first 30 minutes of that second meeting, her personal staff had been present, helping plan and explain the logistics of the immunization effort. It was the largest public health effort in the nation's history, so there were a lot of logistics. Then Blackmun had asked everyone to leave, everyone except Murray. This wasn't the first time he'd been alone with a president. Going on 4 decades now, Murray had been summoned to this office to discuss things that could have no record of being discussed. Blackmun had her left leg crossed over her right, the hem of her stiff dress suit perfectly positioned over her left knee. In her lap, she had an open folder. Blackman preferred paper over electronics whenever it was convenient, one of the few things about her that Murray found admirable. She shut the folder and looked up at him.
The first delivery of inoculant will be here tomorrow afternoon. Deliveries to military facilities will start arriving tomorrow night, and it will take a week before we reach them all. The first civilian deliveries are scheduled to arrive in major cities 2 days from now. I'm burning every last scrap of political capital I have on this, Director Longworth, so I have to put you on the spot. I want to know what Cheng saw when he tested it on his crawlers.
Now Murray understood the reason for the one-on-one meeting. In the wake of the Los Angeles' attack, Murray had given Captain Yasaka a clear order. Send Tim Feely down to the lab to process the bodies and have him package tissue samples to be sent to Black Manitou. Feely had been in such a rush that he'd only prepared samples from Petrovsky, an unfortunate choice, considering Margaret's insistence that Walker's Hydras might be humanity's final solution. The end result, crawlers had escaped the task force, because Murray had orchestrated it. The transport had been risky, of course, but had gone off without a hitch. Cheng's team had a brain-dead woman on Black Manitou Island, which they were using to cultivate the crawlers for research and testing. Crawlers and test subjects alike were locked down in conditions that made BSL-4 precautions look about as difficult to pass through as airport security. Cheng and his team were just as sequestered on their island as Margaret, Clarence, and Feely were on the Coronado. Murray could count the people who knew about the Black Manitou crawlers on two hands and leave three fingers to spare. And that number included the president and himself. Murray hadn't even told Margaret. Apparently, neither had Feely. Something the man seemed to think was a favor to Murray. Feely had called in that imaginary marker during the argument with Cheng over who got to name the yeast. Murray could give a wet shit about the name of the damn stuff, so Feely got what he wanted. Besides, that had pissed off Cheng, and Murray hated Cheng.
Dr. Cheng tested the inoculant directly on the crawlers harvested from Charles Petrovsky's corpse, Murray said. The substance dissolved the crawlers with 100% efficiency. However, his team euthanized the subject and performed an autopsy. The inoculant had no effect on removing the infection from her brain. As Montoya and Feely predicted, once the infection reaches the brain, it is too late.
So it's not a cure, and we still don't know if it prevents infection,
Blackman said.
Can we test it on lab animals, see if it really does inoculate them?
Murray shook his head.
The crawlers only survive in humans, Madam President. We don't know why. They don't even survive in primates.
Blackman nodded. She fell silent, stared off. Murray waited. He already knew what she was going to ask. She looked at him.
The seals on the Coronado took the inoculant yesterday, did they not?
Murray nodded. Blackman sighed. Murray had seen that before, too. A leader's reluctant acceptance that he or she had to put someone directly in the line of fire.
We need a volunteer. Get one of those seals to Black Manitou, inject him with the crawlers. We have to know for sure if this actually works.
She wasn't fucking around. But to directly expose a serviceman to that risk, the soldier Murray had once been bristled at the thought.
Madam President, we have a little time to keep testing the...
Now, Director Longworth, we've already turned a huge sector of our economy over to making the inoculant. If it doesn't work, then we have to put all resources behind Dr. Montoya's Hydra theory.
Murray nodded again. The president was right, of course. Protecting a single soldier wasn't worth the wait. Four sunken Navy ships and over 1,000 dead sailors were ample enough evidence for that.
I'll take care of it, Madam President.
Thank you, Director Longworth.
He'd been dismissed. He left the Oval Office. The president had given him an order. Maybe one of Klimas's men would actually volunteer. Knowing those crazy-ass seals, they probably all would. Murray hoped the inoculation worked. Hell, for once, he'd even pray.
In the climate-ravaged world of 2072, the city of Piura stands as a miraculous green haven. Piura is a geoengineered paradise that protects its fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. In a time when the world outside is unsafe, it's vital for Piura's existence that people rally behind the purpose of the city, and Demetria Lopez, head of the city's public relations, tirelessly promotes its idyllic image. But when she stumbles on a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Piura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Chapter 3, The Hangover. Steve Stanton threw up. Again. At least this time he'd made it to the toilet. When his stomach finally relaxed, he slumped down on his butt. He wondered how much dried urine from hotel residents past he was now sitting in. It wasn't the first time he'd gone drinking, but he'd never partied that hard before. Now he was paying the price. His head pounded so bad it hurt to move. His throat felt sore. His body ached. Becky had left a few hours earlier, sometime around noon if he remembered correctly. What a night. He, Steve Stanton, had gone out to a bar, met a girl, and got laid. He could hardly believe it. But now, oh man, his head. He had to stand up, then make his way back to bed. He'd sleep the day away, or at least try to. Tomorrow, maybe, he'd feel better. Chapter 4 The Hangover, Part 2 Cooper took the wet washcloth off his forehead, flipped it, then gently set it back in place, sighing as he felt the fabric's coolness against his skin. He was getting too old for this shit. He was certainly old enough, experienced enough, to know what awaited him at the business end of 10 beers and 6 shots. Cooper glanced at the room's other bed. It held one occupant, the waitress from Monk's. He didn't remember Jeff bringing her back with them, nor did he remember hearing anything during the night. He didn't remember seeing her when he'd stumbled to the bathroom for the washcloth. How far gone did he have to be to not know his best friend was tagging a hot waitress just a few feet away? A loud, sawing, snoring sound came from the foot of the beds, by the TV on the dresser. Cooper slowly lifted himself up on his elbows. There was Jeff, buck naked, lying on the floor on top of his jeans and AC/DC shirt.
"Strong work," Cooper said.
He lay back and closed his eyes, tried to manage his throbbing head. It hurt to swallow. Had he been screaming all night? He wasn't sure, because he couldn't really remember anything after that 6th beer. Yes, he was old enough to know better. After he slept this one off, he'd make changes. Sure, he'd promised himself the same thing 100 times before, but this time would be different. Chapter 5 The Cool Kids Maybe Tim wasn't so unlucky after all. He'd worked on Black Manitou long before it had been a government-owned facility. That had been his first job out of college, working for a civilian biotech company engaged in questionable research. That research had gone south. People had died in horrible ways. He'd almost died himself. After that, he'd taken the job with the Operation Wolfhead Task Force, preferring the isolation of a military ship on the water to the memories of what he'd seen on land. He hadn't actually thought the infection could return. He'd felt protected, safe, but that hadn't lasted. The infection's reemergence and all the death that came with it made him think he was some kind of doomed soul. And yet, that math didn't add up. How many people had died during his time on Black Manitou? He wasn't sure, but that number paled in comparison to the task force disaster, to 5 ships and over 1,000 corpses resting at the bottom of Lake Michigan. Yet he had survived, again. He was one of only 3 people to make it out alive. On top of that, he was now one of the few people in the world immune to that alien bullshit. Probably immune, anyway. For now, he was as safe could be, sitting at a table in the Coronado's cargo hold, sipping Lagavulin with 3 SEALs who had taken quite a shine to him.
"Let me get this straight," said Deshaun Bosch. "You're saying you can tell if people are infected by how fast Tylenol sells?"
Tim nodded.
"Basically, yeah. I can even do it from here on the Coronado. Klimas set me up with a laptop that ties into the TSCE.
The total ship computing environment gave him ridiculously high-speed internet access, even though they were floating in the middle of an inland sea. Bosch smiled.
"Well, look at my man here! TSCE! Like he's been in the Navy all his life!"
A day ago, a comment like that would have embarrassed him, made him wonder if these big, dangerous guys were mocking him. But not now. They loved him. He'd helped save one of their own. He'd done it under fire. It shocked him as much as it did anyone else. But when the shit had hit the fan, he'd actually been brave. Whatever bravery Tim had, however, paled in comparison to the man he'd helped save. A few hours earlier, a helicopter had taken Roger Levinson off the Coronado. Tim knew there was only one reason to do that. A human trial to test the inoculant against direct exposure to the crawlers kept on Black Manitou. No one else knew that,
except for Levinson, and probably Klimas, Levinson's commanding officer. Their fellow SEALs didn't know the mission. They only knew that Levinson had volunteered for some secret duty. Volunteered. The courage and self-sacrifice needed to do that. Tim couldn't quite process it. Saccharomyces fili would soon be put to the ultimate test. If Tim's solution didn't work, Roger Levinson would become infected. If that happened, Tim knew, everyone and everything was screwed. Calvin Roth, the big one, drained his shot glass, set it down on the table.
What I don't get are all the little critters floating through people's bodies. We drank your nasty-ass yeast to protect us from crawlers, which are part plant, part us. But then there are also hydras, which maybe aren't part plant, but are part us.
He shook his head, pushed his glass over to Ramirez.
Fill me up, Ram. I need another shot to understand this shit.
Ramirez dutifully filled the glass. Tim had to concentrate to not stare at the man's patchy, pencil-thin mustache.
You're not that far off, Tim said. You drank the inoculant, which...
Camel taint pus,
Ross said, raising his glass. Ramirez raised his own.
I'll drink to that. Knock 'em down, boys.
Tim drained his glass, felt his throat burning. He set his glass on the table and made an educated guess that these men would drink to just about anything.
Like I was saying, you guys drank the inoculant. That means even if you did get exposed to the infection when you rescued us, you're fine, because the inoculant wipes out the infection if you take it within 24 hours of exposure. And if you weren't exposed, now you're safe as long as you keep taking the inoculant doses every couple of weeks. If you get exposed from here on out, you technically still get infected, and the infection will modify your cells to make crawlers or other things, but those things will dissolve before they can do any damage because of the catalyst that's in your blood.
Bosch nodded.
It's like if we had to dive into a vat of acid to assemble a bomb. All the parts of the bomb are there, but we don't last long enough to put them together.
Tim clapped and leaned back, almost fell over his chair. He was drunker than he thought.
D-Day, you nailed it!
The men had insisted Tim call them by their first names, or their nicknames. D-Day, Ram, and plain old Cal.
Ramirez shook his head. I don't get it. The hydras kill the infection. Why are we fucking around with this yeast when we could just, I don't know, pre-infect ourselves with the hydras?
Tim raised a finger.
Ah, a good point, my man. Two reasons. First, we don't have any hydras. They went down with the Brashear. Second, even if we did have them, we wouldn't use them. Once the hydras get into your body, they start reproducing. We don't know if they'll stop at a certain point, or if they will keep on reproducing until there are so many of them they damage you, maybe even kill you.
Reproducing, Roth said. Little animal things in your blood fucking away. Like a microscopic orgy?
Tim laughed.
While I admire that analogy more than you will ever know, my extra-large friend, the hydras reproduce asexually. That means they don't have to mate to produce offspring.
Roth shook his head in disgust.
That's as fucked up as a football bat.
Ramirez leaned in, the half-full bottle in his hand.
They do it with themselves because they can't get laid, just like Cal.
Roth drained his scotch, set the glass down.
For that, little man, you get to fill my glass. And I do it with myself because I'm just that damn good.
Hear, hear,
Ramirez said, and poured another round of shots. None of the fun seemed to have sunk into Bosch. To him, this was obviously serious business.
It's all so fucked, he said. I'd rather have an enemy I can see. Alien microbes, modified yeast. Just give me something I can shoot.
Ramirez nodded sagely.
Wiser words were never spoken, D-Day.
Come on, boys, around the horn again. Let's see those glasses.
Everyone pushed their shot glasses toward Ramirez. He filled all four. The SEALs raised theirs, and Tim followed suit.
The men let out a loud, "Ooyah!" and they drank. Half of Tim's shot slid down the side of his face. The glass slid out of his hand. Shoddy workmanship, apparently. "Go home, shot glass, you're drunk." That, or he was drunk. Drunk and safe. Isolated from everything. Surrounded by trained killers who thought he was the bee's knees. Tim was lucky, after all. If that luck held, he could just stay right here, in this very safe place, until Ching's grand plan ran its course. Chapter 6. A Husband's Role. Clarence Otto stood on the Coronado's rear deck. No wind for a change, just the oppressive cold. He stared out at the setting sun, wondering what might happen next. He'd survived. Margaret had survived. Tim Feely had survived. Black Manitou was leading the effort for mass production of inoculant. By any measure, Clarence had succeeded in his assigned mission. Murray would probably try to give him a medal for the effort. But Clarence didn't want a medal. He wanted Margaret. On board the Carl Brashear, the woman he'd fallen in love with had returned. She'd been decisive, insightful, tireless, and brilliant. She'd been her old self, her fighting self. And now? Now she wouldn't see him. All day long she'd stayed locked up in her mission module. He'd tried to get in to talk to her, but through the closed door she'd told him to go away. She sounded scared. She sounded alone. For the last 5 years, whenever she'd felt those emotions, she had come to him. He had comforted her, or at least he'd tried. She was his wife. His job was to protect her, help her through any problem, no matter how great. At the end of the day, no matter how he sliced it, that was a mission he'd failed. The sun finally ducked below the water, leaving only the residual glow of pink clouds to reflect against Lake Michigan's tall waves. Maybe tomorrow he could talk to her. Maybe he could make it all up to her. If he worked hard enough at it, if he apologized enough, then maybe, maybe, they could repair the damage they had done to each other. Maybe they could be together again. Chapter 7. Day 7. Actualization. Clarence Otto had to die. They all had to die. All of them. All the humans. Margaret had turned off the lights in her bunk module. She sat alone in the dark, thinking. She finally understood. Why had she fought against this for so long? It was so obvious. People had turned the Earth into a cesspool of hatred and waste, had taken the gift of winning evolution's grand game and pissed it away. She got it now. She understood. The orbital had tried to fix things. It had tried to do God's work. Not the God she had thought she'd known in the naivete of childhood, or any of the thousands of randomly invented supernatural beings that caused people to slaughter each other throughout history. No, a real God. A God with the power to send ships across space. The power to change human beings into something else. Something new. Something powerful. Humanity had shit all over this planet. It was time to remove humanity. Time to let the world start over. Margaret hated them. She wanted to walk out of her little cabin and stab the first person she saw. Maybe find a wrench, bash them in the head again and again until bone cracked, until she saw the bloody mess that was their brains. She wanted to kill Clarence. She wanted to kill Tim. She wanted to kill the sailors, the SEALs, sink this fucking ship and put them all on the bottom so they would never hurt anyone ever again. Margaret stood. The thought of taking life thrilled her, infused her with excitement, made her vibrate and bubble with pure energy. Who would be first? She reached for the door handle, then stopped. They outnumbered her. If she killed one of them, maybe even two or three, the rest would certainly get her. She couldn't let that happen, because she was meant for something greater. Margaret's former self had tried to second-guess the orbital, tried to figure out what strategy would come next. She'd never even considered its latest tactic: create an infectious agent that the cellulose kits didn't detect. An infectious agent that turned brilliant humans into converted leaders. Leaders who could pass undetected among the humans. Leaders who could infiltrate human organizations. Leaders who could gather the troops of God together, make them operate as an organized unit. Margaret could do all of those things. She had been chosen for it. How ironic that Clarence turned out to be right after all. Margaret Montoya wasn't a soldier. She was a general. All she had to do was bide her time and wait for her army. She wasn't contagious. Her infection gave her that knowledge. No tongue triangles, no blisters with dandelion seeds, nothing that could reveal her true nature. That made perfect sense. If she showed those telltale symptoms, the humans would kill her. Not being contagious was actually a form of camouflage. For now, while trapped on this ship, she had to blend in. She couldn't kill anyone. She couldn't do anything out of the ordinary. She had to wait. She had to be calm, like Cantrell had been back on the Brashear. Not at first, no. He'd been jittery, paranoid. He must have been very close to finally realizing his role, just as Margaret now realized hers. The orbital must have engineered new crawlers that could penetrate BSL-4 suits. That was the only logical answer. It wouldn't take much, just a microscopic hole, barely detectable if it was even detectable at all. Was that how Clark and Cantrell had become infected? Yes, that made sense. And when they were submerged in bleach, maybe the pressure change caused a tiny bit to leak through. That explained why they both reported smelling it. But if the crawlers had worked their way through her suit, why hadn't they worked their way through Tim's? Why wasn't he converted? Because he'd ingested that yeast. Her exposure had to have come from Petrovsky's body. Tim had worked on Petrovsky as well, had also been exposed, but he'd taken the yeast within 24 hours of that exposure. Margaret hadn't ingested the inoculant until the next day, at least 48 hours after the likely exposure. What a difference a day makes. Margaret wanted to laugh. She wanted to scream with joy. The precautions and preparations of the thing she used to be had been useless against the glory of God's plan. How foolish her former self had been. How arrogant to think she could outsmart such a power. But that didn't matter anymore. God had chosen her. Margaret reached for the door. She opened it. Time to join the others. Not to hurt them. Not to drive a knife into their throats. But to simply pretend she was one of them. If she played it smart, sooner or later she'd make it to the mainland. She'd find others like herself. She would organize them into an army of God. Then the carnage would begin.
You have been listening to Pandemic, book 3 of the Infected Trilogy by number 1 New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. Performed by Phil Gigante. Produced by Empty Set Entertainment.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.